Hey guys, I want to invite you to the Liturgy of the Land Conference on December 13th and 14th. Go to liturgyoftheland.com for more information, but I want to invite you to join us for a 2 days discussion, discernment, and community with a phenomenal lineup of experienced homesteaders, farmers, and craftsmen. Dave and Lady Pamela will be there, Lady Haley and I will be there, and we'd love to have you guys there as well. Go to liturgyoftheland.com. There's already 60% of the tickets have been sold, so they're going very, very fast. But Sean and Beth Doherty is going to be there, Brandon Shear, Jason Craig, Tom Gallagher from Tan Books, Alan Harrelson, who's been on our show, Pipe Cottage, Thomas Van Horn, who's the owner of Ambrosian Candle Company, who also provided us with candles for a lot of our patrons, Dr. Jared Stout from Exodus 90. There's going to be a whole host of different people there. We'd love to have you guys go. Go to liturgyoftheland.com for more information. Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. Adam and Ann here sitting with David Niles at David Niles Fecundity Farms.
The one. People have been asking. This is it.
Like, what do you name your ranch?
Niles Ranch and Fecundity Farm. It's a very fecund place.
It's beautiful.
I say that because, like, within a week, we had a baby. Baby chicks hatched and...
A human baby.
Mm-hmm. And then the baby pigs. It was actually just over a week, but still.
And then chicks as well.
Yeah, it was like babies everywhere. And it's like, man, this place is like very fecund.
This is just like...
And I started making a
fertile
joke.
Fertile soil.
And I was like, you know what? I'm going with it. So I have a logo. Niles Ranch and Fecundity Farm.
Did you go to like fiverr.com and ask somebody to do it?
It was way easier than that. I typed in like AI logo generator. And it was amazingly easy, fast, and good.
Yeah.
It was a little too easy, fast, and good.
Mm-hmm.
It took me 5 minutes, and that's only because I didn't like the first website I went to.
You had to reset.
Like, I tried it on the first one, and I was like, no. And I even tried ChatGPT, and that was nice, because I could, like, you can talk to it and, like, really give it. But it was, like, spelling stuff weird. It wasn't getting, like, it was... putting letters of the words together and like
you had it in Spanish, bro.
It was doing a lot of AI dreaming or whatever they call that. And so I went to another website, but honestly, it was 5 minutes.
We bought a cattle trailer.
We
didn't even tell Jim. Jim's here, by the way.
Jim, we bought a cattle trailer.
Yep.
Adam and I.
And Jim's son-in-law.
Yeah,
Jake.
What's up, Jake?
Jake, good. He has a glorious beard.
Yeah, I was, you know what, Jake, when I first saw you, I was like, oh, man, the beard is looking strong.
Yeah.
So well done, sir.
Yeah, but we got a cattle trailer, so that's like the next step to owning cattle for me. Now, really, all there is left is to own, like, go buy the cows.
I just feel so ready that in a number of months, I just know I'll do it.
I'm going to go get it, yeah. Yeah, so we did that. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
You still haven't even seen it, but...
No, but I'm going to have to use it next week.
Be a price.
Yeah, I know, I paid half of it.
Oh, man, so we went deer hunting this last weekend. So there was... I only saw 3 little yearlings, okay?
And I shoot those right up.
Well, here's the thing. It was within the first 30 minutes out on the stand.
Yeah.
And I see all 3 of them, and I'm like, oh, I do not want to shoot these little yearlings, because it's like, you know, you're going to get like 15 pounds of meat, you know, and it's a lot of work. And I was like, but if all 3 of them line up and I have a shot, I'm going to take a shot. And
with this 308.
Yeah, and I'm just going to blow a hole through all of them. And
there are shows, reality shows, where they've done stuff like this, like how many pumpkins will this, you know, the caliber go through. I wonder if, I don't know that anyone's ever done, like, how many baby deer does
This one's yours, Jim. Yeah, but two of them lined up perfectly.
Did you do it?
And I'm like, oh no.
I'm going to have to do it.
I've already made my mind up. Like, if I'm going to do this.
I committed.
Yeah, and mentally. And the third one starts walking up towards them. And I'm like, oh no.
So you shoot your gun in the air so they don't go.
So I go, ah! Scare them off. No, it's walking up. And I'm like, man, I'm going to have to do it. Because, like, what are the odds of me being able to also get another shot?
It would
like,
be so epic.
I mean, it probably wouldn't work because a bullet would mushroom out, you know, yeah. And it would, or if it hit a rib
if you were shooting like target ammo,
right?
Like
where going straight
round
through.
Ammo, yeah, like just bullets.
But luckily, at the very end, for their sake and for mine, the third one went off in a different direction. So, other than that, though, I didn't see anything, which is odd. Because we had deer all over the cameras and they just knew we were coming, I guess, and they were not about it.
I've been trying to tell you, dude. I got you that bottle of deer urine. You have to cover yourself in it before you go out. Yeah, it's the only way.
I keep forgetting. I don't know why.
I don't need to use it because I don't have the same problem that you do.
Right.
But you need to use it.
So, I don't know. I don't think Thanksgiving I'm going to be able to go out. I don't think I'm going to be able to convince my family to let me go out during Thanksgiving or anything.
It's for the family. It's for the family.
I agree. But so anyway, I don't know. It was a bad deer season for me. It was just so hot. You know, it's been hot.
Yeah, it has been hot.
So it's been tough to.
It'll get cold, though.
Yeah, but not at the right time.
Yeah, well, maybe not convenient with your schedule.
Right. So anyway, we have that. Our winter wheat at our place is growing. It's doing well.
Yes, yeah. So I grew wheat last year and have been grinding my own flour.
Mm-hmm. We talked about this
year. It's been really fun.
The last episode or two ago.
And so you guys are now planting wheat. I'm really excited. Mm-hmm. Just because I'm excited for you guys.
Yeah.
Because it's been really fun for us to do.
Mm-hmm.
With the right tools, which you have the benefit of me having already like struggled to figure out the right process.
This is what I like to do all the time.
Yeah. And so it'll be great for you.
I hope so.
To be able to just do it the easy way that I finally figured out.
Yeah. So yeah, that's gonna be it'll be fun to see that come about.
And like it doesn't take very much space. So last year I planted wheat in a 30 by 35 foot area.
Mm-hmm.
And that is enough for us mostly. I mean, that's gonna probably last us all year. We do still buy some so the thing is I only have cake flour because that was soft winter wheat.
Mm-hmm.
So we do still buy some all-purpose flour for like...
All-purpose things.
But mostly we just use the wheat that we grind ourselves. So, but yeah. I mean, that's not a very big 30 feet by 35 feet. No. It's not like you have to have acres and farm equipment and...
Right. Dude, did I tell on the show about the pork... Did I smoke?
No, you didn't the show.
Okay, good. Because I want to tell.
Tell us.
Give the barbecue update.
How was it?
We may have a new segment of the Catholic Man Show called the Barbecue Update, where it's like, what's on the smoker today? So what I did was I took. So Costco is running a big special, $8 off their pork shoulders, which is fantastic. $8 off? Are you kidding me? That's really pretty good. So I bought like four of them, and inside each package is two pork shoulders. So wow. I have like eight pork shoulders. So it's like, you know, we're doing good on pork right now. And so I decided like, hey, this is a great time to experiment, right? So I took half of a pork shoulder. I cut it up into little cubes and I put the Meat Church honey barbecue rub on it. Cause all of Meat Church stuff is fantastic. Well worth it. I mean, they're expensive. It's like $11 for a little seasoning deal. Well worth it. It's fantastic.
It'll last a long time.
Or one pork shoulder. Depends on how you season it.
Okay. or it doesn't.
Or, yeah. it's a one go. Yeah. So then I smoke it on the smoker for about 6 hours. I pull it off. Then I had this homemade apple jalapeno jelly that we went to the farmer's market and some lady was selling them in little bitty jars. And in the back, she had like this big mason jar of it. And not like one of the like old school, like little, you know, quart size mason jars, but like one of those big moonshine type of mason jars. And I go, how much is that one? And she goes, oh, I don't know. It really is not for sale. I don't know. Would you take, I think, $12 for it? $9, $12 for it? Something like that. Can't remember. What did I tell you it was?
I don't remember. Something like $12. Like that.
And I go, done. Lock it up. So anyway, so I took these pork belly after they've been smoked, and I just dip them in this apple jalapeno jelly and then lay them back on these trays and then put it back into the oven to caramelize that jelly, and I pull them out. Oh my goodness, dude. It was fantastic. It was probably the best, like, it was meat candy is what it was.
Yeah, you know, jalapeno jelly is in the last few years, this is the condiment that has really changed, like, has really come to the, like, the-
Is butter a spice?
Four of my life.
Is jelly a condiment?
I mean, the way I use it, it is a condiment. Like jalapeno jelly, when you like cook yourself a pork chop and then just give it a nice thick spread on top of that chop. Yeah. Like, oh yeah. Dude.
You're not going to regret it.
No. I mean, it's like basically at the dinner table every night, I either have Cholula or jalapeno. I mean, jelly. It's like I'm putting it on. It depends on what's the dish, but it's getting one of the two here.
Right. I'm the same with mule sauce, dude. I put mule sauce on everything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, dude, that was so good. And it was very easy. Like, this is what I love about pork shoulders is that it's almost impossible to mess it up. Brisket, not the case. Brisket's very difficult. It's expensive. It takes a long time to do. If it doesn't turn out well,
you can definitely dry out a brisket.
You're very upset about it because you've spent $120 for it and you've spent 18 hours smoking it or whatever, and it didn't turn out right. Now, I know the new thing is not low and slow. Did you know this?
I have heard this. I have not.
It's not low and slow any longer.
Yeah, that's what they say.
That you can cook them for 4 to 6 hours or whatever. Now, I don't know. I haven't done it very well. Like, I've tried it once. It wasn't great, but I think it was user error. Like,
probably.
Most likely. So anyway, when we get back, we're going to jump into a lack of a virtue and then how to remedy it on the other side of the break. We'll be right back.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. Getting ready to get into the topic here. I'm kind of lukewarm on it, really. I could take it or leave it today, this particular topic.
We will have to go through some of this to really enlighten you about where you are then spiritually.
Yeah.
This is where I'm cutting into the episode because I was trying my best to introduce the topic of tepidity, and Dave kept interrupting, and I know that sounds like not something he would do, or sending us down a rabbit trail, which we did. And so it was not worth putting onto the podcast. So anyway, I am trying my best to introduce the topic of tepidity here.
So this is I'm just trying to move on, and we just keep going.
Sorry, French friends.
Yeah. So this is in reference to the state of a soul where there's a lack of fervor or charity, but it hasn't yet deteriorated to hatred or indifference. So it is this sense of lukewarmness, but in a way that, I don't know, there were several things that was brought to my attention to this that I don't normally classify it as lukewarmness, or at least in my mind, I haven't classified it as such.
Okay.
I'm pulling this from a book called Solid Virtue, and it's by a Jesuit priest from the 17th century, 18th century, 17th into the 18th century. How would you say that? How would you say his last name there?
Bellacius?
Because it's French as well.
I cannot pronounce French things.
Yeah.
I can just do French accents.
So he was a priest that he did a lot of formation. He was also he formed the seminary. He formed other priests, but he also like put together people to go spread the good news to India, and so that was kind of one of his first missions was to like put together these missionaries. Missionary disciples to go into India. And so he would, at the end of his life, they asked him to give all these conferences of what he learned. And he died at a pretty young age in his 50s. But this is part of what he went over in some of his spiritual conferences that he put together. So he's talking about those who are tepid. And he gives like 11 things right off the bat. If you read in the book, he basically, the first paragraph is just 11 points.
Like opening paragraph
is 11
here's
points.
Here's 11 things.
Yeah. I was like, oh my goodness. Like, look at this. I underlined everything. It's like, that was because I didn't realize it was.
That's how you know it's a good book when that happens to me sometimes when I'm reading something that's just mind blowing. I come across paragraphs where I have underlined each sentence individually. It wasn't like a continued point. It was right. Like, this sentence was awesome. Oh, and the next sentence, also awesome. You know?
Yeah. And so as he's going through it, he's like, these are the people who are tepid. And then he talks about the dangers of being tepid. And then he talks about the remedies of it. And so I thought, like, this would be a good conversation just to have because there's things that he brought up that I would not have pinpoint as lukewarmness, so to speak.
Okay.
But the first one I do like, I think it's really good to say I would have pinpointed this as lukewarmness, but those who have horror only to mortal sin and to think very little of venial sin.
Yeah. This is a very common attitude, I think. It's like, yeah, you know, it's just venial sin, you know, like, it's a very selfish attitude to say, oh, it's just venial sin, mm-hmm. right? Because that implies an attitude of, I only care about myself getting to heaven. This sin doesn't stop me from getting to heaven because it's not a mortal.
At least immediately.
It's not formulaically a mortal sin, which would cut off the charity in my soul and, remove sanctifying grace from my soul. So, like, who cares?
Right.
Because I only care about myself. And, like, I still get, you know, like I'm still good.
Right.
Instead of, so it betrays just a very selfish, like a lack of, you don't care about God. You just right. care about yourself.
I do think that there's a spiritual progress that happens though when you do reach that point where you're not worried about mortal sin as, you know, as much as committing it and, but you don't think as much about venial sin. There's this like situation where it's like, okay, fine. Finally, I'm not continually just falling into the state of mortal sin, and you kind of like don't pay attention as much to venial sin.
Sure, there is a period, you know, early. Hopefully, it's early in the spiritual life where you are aware of the mortal sins, the great sins that you're committing, and are simply at war with them.
Mm-hmm.
And the venial sins don't even rise to the level of your attention because you are so focused on these other things, which are a major problem, right? I mean, I can think back times in my life where that was, and it wasn't that I had the attitude of like, venial sin, who cares?
it was like, I didn't even think about them at all because, you know, I was had this assault going on from these mortal sins, you know, that I was focused on.
Yeah. So the other day at our Friday men's group that we always meet on Friday mornings, you were actually not there. It was one of the ones you weren't there. And I was talking about...
This must have been not the most recent one.
No, I think a week or two before.
Yeah.
But I was talking to our guys about... We were talking about the spiritual life, and I was just, I mentioned how there was some... I was struggling going into adoration. Like, you know, just not... I just didn't feel like I was giving it my all. I didn't feel like that I was, like, doing very well in adoration. I didn't feel like... I felt like it was just difficult. I felt... I don't know. There was no fruits that I felt like, you know, I didn't feel anything good, you know, which is, I know you don't, you know, base your spiritual life on emotions, but I just felt like I was not doing well, just even spending time with him. And so I was talking to him about it, and I said, you know, I kind of came up to the conclusion that there were times, those times that I felt like I didn't do well in adoration, whatever the heck that means, but, you know, you know, as you're leaving, you're like, man, I just didn't do well there. Like, I didn't give my effort. I wasn't focused. It was because on the way to adoration, I was filling my mind with a bunch of other things. I wasn't really actually preparing myself to go into adoration, to go into face the King of Kings, the King of Glory, who has been waiting for 2,000 years for that very moment for me to stand and, you know, in front of him and just waste time with him. That I was just kind of haphazardly, like, you know, just getting into my car, thinking about all the things about the day and all the things I was going to be doing. And I just wasn't, like, focusing on preparing myself to enter into adoration.
Yeah. You know, I know this is not exactly what we're talking about today, but I do think that we all have to really, really think about, you know, you're not exactly talking about our use of technology, but I have noticed in my own life when I spend time on YouTube, not, oh, hey, let me watch it, like I'm doing research about how to get a project done or something, but like, you know, you just kind of end up watching YouTube videos.
Mm-hmm.
It has a fracturing effect on my mind. And for the next several days, I can actually tell the difference in my prayer life, that my mind is even more, like, it's harder and harder for me to maintain like a train of thought. And I know... The reason I can sense it in my prayer life is because I'm still. It doesn't mean it doesn't. It's happening throughout all the things I'm doing in my day. You know, like it affects my work too. It just affects my brain. And so I've been trying to really, really focus on my use of, you know, like just absolutely get rid of all non-essential things. It's not just YouTube, but other things like that. Because like when I go to adoration, I can't be present. I just cannot bring myself
mm-hmm.
the way I want to.
Right. And this goes into the next two, basically, that he talks about. He says, perform spiritual exercises negligently, and then also praying without attention.
He says, so these are, that's a sign of tepidity?
Right, is what he's saying. Because, and I mean, to me that makes sense. If you actually knew what was going on, that you were going to be in front of the God-man himself, you know, in the Holy Eucharist, and you are just kind of like very nonchalantly walking up and just kind of like sitting down or kneeling down, not really thinking about like that your Savior is right in front of you. You know, that's a sign of caution. You know, there's a red flags, I think.
Yeah.
Just a lack of awareness of what's actually happening in mm-hmm. front of you.
Right. It's worse that you know what's right in front of you and you just go, okay.
Just kind of.
Whatever.
Right. So
I don't think anybody says like outwardly or on purpose, but I think many, many people, like all of us, I don't think anybody can, you have to be really careful saying tepidity is not my thing. That's not the thing I struggle with. You know, because, you know,
pride's not a thing that I struggle with.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's kind of like that, you know, right. Like, well, maybe you're not tepid in this part of your spiritual life, but what about your dedication to your work? You know, right. What about the other things that like are part of your vocation, right? Mm-hmm. I've not met a man who doesn't have some sort of tepidity. in some aspect of his life.
He actually kind of talks more about that in these 11. So yeah, so pray without attention, confess without amendment is another one, which is tough.
Oh, well, you can't do that.
All right. Receive communion without devotion and fruit is another one. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. We'll be right back.
Men, do you feel stuck in old idols or burdened by the pharaohs of our time? Do you know that you're capable of so much more than you are giving today? Exodus 90 is the number one freedom app to help you become the man you were created to be. Exodus 90 is a powerful 90-day journey to freedom in Jesus Christ, and it starts on January 20th. Download the Exodus 90 app today to join tens of thousands of men from all around the world. We begin January 20th. Join us.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. Before the break, we were talking about receiving communion without devotion and fruit. I think that's something else that is very easy to do if you're a lifelong Catholic, you've been going to Mass your whole life. It's very easy to take for granted the splendor, mystery, and glory of what is the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass. And you're walking up in the communion line and you're looking at your kids, making sure that they're supposed to be doing what they're doing. And
you mean like glaring at your kids?
Like kind of giving them the death stare?
Giving the, like, yeah,
do not move.
These are the most threatening eyeballs I've ever had.
And you're trying to make sure that, you know,
it's amazing the amount of like threats that take place during the Mass. The Holy Sacrifice of the Mass can be a very threatening place
for children.
In pews with large families.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But somebody told me once, as you're going up to receive communion, to ask, you know, our Blessed Mother and Saint Joseph to receive this as well as possible, to obtain the grace for you to receive this and it be not a damnation to your soul, but the fountain of life for your soul.
I have developed, I'm going to call it a habit. It's about 50-50 whether I remember to do it or not. So I don't know if that counts as a habit, but I do it regularly. I will ask as I'm in line on my way up to receive, I'll ask Our Lady to help give me the grace to receive him the way she received him. In the way she received, you know, the, that I might love him the way she loves him.
Mm.
That I actually ask her to take away my heart and give me yours.
Mm.
That I might love him the way you do, because mine's not good enough.
Yeah, that's it. That's beautiful.
Like, it helps, but I still have my own problems.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you did. Yeah,
like,
you have
list.
A lot of problems.
Like, a lot.
Yeah. But I do think that's important, and also because your children are watching you as well, right? So they witness like how you are. This is the importance of.
That's why I say it out loud, loudly, as I'm in line.
I bet you do. Yeah. this is the importance of decorum. This is the importance of reverence, right? Is that the reason why we get dressed up for Holy Mass on Sunday is because we're going in front of the King of Kings. The King of Glory, right, is for the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, for mm-hmm. the source and summit of our faith, the Eucharist. And the reason why we are reverent, the reason why we, you know, stand a certain way and we put our hands a certain way and we bow a certain way is not for any kind of show other than just out of justice to our Lord who gave himself for us that we may become more like him in the Eucharist.
Yeah, absolutely. It's important for little kids not to understand it, but to have those practices, because it's not true just for little kids. It's true for everybody that the things we do with our body influence the things we have, like our thoughts, right? If you behave a certain way, eventually you start to think in accordance with the way you behave,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you are living a lie, if you're doing something where you're living a lie, okay, you're doing something with your body you know isn't true. Eventually, you're going to just start to believe the lie that you're living because, you know, you're doing it. And we are body, soul, composites, right? Like we're not a soul trapped in a body. We're not a mind. Our intellect is not separate from our body. Mm-hmm. And so when we do one with the one, we do it with both.
Yep. Which goes into our next point where he talks about performing our daily actions without proper intention or without method or order, which I really find rough.
This is the hard, like of the list so far, this one is the hardest for me. It's not that I like don't want to have intention. I mean, I'm just kind of going about my day. It's more of like I often forget to be, you know, absolutely intentional. I'm just kind of like doing like my day. I'm very absent-minded, kind of by nature. Yeah, I know that's a shock to you. Huh. But I wish I could be like more present, you know. And it's not that it would change the tasks that I do, but I think it would change the desire which I did them. You know, like, you know, if I have to, let's say I have to call a client at the office, okay? On the one hand, I'm just
calling Jim, hypothetically.
Let's say I'm going to call Jimbo Baggins himself.
And your money's gone.
And tell him that all of his money's gone. You know, I could just do that because it was something I needed to do, or I could do it with the out of gratitude for the
opportunity that he gave you.
This vocation that I've been given by God, yeah. And like in order, and I could make it through an act of the will. It's not like outwardly anything changes, but now all of a sudden, as an act of the will, an act of charity, mm-hmm. You know, and that's what I don't have because it's just, you know. You go about your day and you just kind of forget all about all this stuff sometimes.
Yeah. When we, at Exodus 90, when we start out our like meetings for the day, we start out with this prayer. It's a prayer to St. Joseph and it's a haunting prayer.
I hate that prayer.
Yeah.
It's on my desk.
Yeah.
And I never pray it because I see it and I'm like, oh no, I can't do that one.
Well, let me.
Are you going to pray it?
I'm going to pray it. And because I think it's intense. I think it's like, and
it's a beautiful prayer.
It's a beautiful prayer. It says, O glorious Saint Joseph, model to all those who are devoted to labor, obtain for me the grace to work conscientiously, putting the call of duty above my natural inclinations, to work with gratitude and joy, in a spirit of penance for the remission of my sins, considering it an honor to employ and develop by means of labor the gifts received from God, to work with order, peace, moderation, and patience, without ever shrinking from weariness and difficulties, to work above all with purity and intention and detachment from self, having always death before my eyes and the account that I must render of time lost, of talents wasted, of good omitted, of vain complacency, in success, so fatal to the work of God, all for Jesus, all through Mary, all after thine example, O Patriarch Saint Joseph, such shall be my motto in life and in death.
Yeah, what was that again? Like, what does it say about, complacency and success?
Yeah,
vain complacency and success. So baneful. The translation I have is this says so fatal, which is fine. It's so baneful to the work of God. On the one hand, it kind of reminds me of that one campaign speech that Trump made about like, we can't. You're going to get tired of winning. We have to keep winning. But like just being complacent in your success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as if, oh, well, you know, like I did one virtuous thing. So like that was good. Like good. Now I can kind of check it. It's like, no, no, no. You have to keep winning.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Sometimes you do actually get tired of winning.
Well, or not winning, but you have to keep doing it. You have to keep going.
I'm calling virtue a win, you know, like,
okay.
Yeah. Just being virtuous, committing a virtuous act as a win. You just have to keep doing that. And you can't because St. Joseph, every act of his was virtuous, right? Because he was
a just man.
He was one of the greatest saints of all time who I do think had, because of the office that he was going to fulfill, and also he's just awesome, did have this ability to work with a level of humility that was rivaled probably only by one. And that was the woman he was married to.
Yeah.
Where it was just like constantly before his eyes, death and the account that he would need to give, right?
This is what, like, without method and order, like, doing things, you know, the tranquility of order brings peace. When you don't have order in your life, you don't have peace in your life. And so these next couple kind of all piggyback together, so I'm just going to lump them together. And this is something that I struggle with as well, is, you know, so a neglect to pursue of the higher virtue. You know, of like not choosing the highest good, still choosing a good, but just not choosing the highest good.
Yeah.
You know, the content with mediocrity. And then like, because not choosing the highest good, because you've been like content with this mediocrity, that like you have this intent on, or this focus on exterior things, and you give less time and thoughts to the higher goods, namely God.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is all kind of encompassing, right? Like, and they all play off of each other, that by not choosing the highest goods, you are, it creates a disorder. It creates a lack of a method of understanding, like, your call to holiness, this universal call to holiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's really everybody's problem. They're really like all sin, even sin is simply in almost all cases, a person with disordered affections, who are desiring and choosing lesser goods.
Right.
You know, because on a basic level, all choices that we can make have some goodness to them, mm-hmm. right? Like when you look at the Garden of Eden, Eve saw the apple was good, mm-hmm. right? It was good for eating, like in desire for knowledge, right? She saw these goods.
Right.
And she was, this was the problem, is that she was convinced of a disorder.
Right. It's almost like you can't choose actually something that you've like perceived as an evil. You always choose a good. It's just that you have a disordered understanding of what that choice is.
Exactly. Right.
So, when we get back, we do have one more segment, right?
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. So when we get back, number 10 is one that really shocked me on this list. We have 10 and 11, and then we'll get into the dangers and the remedies probably on the podcast. We're back.
Adam, I don't know about you, but I am getting tired of giving my hard-earned money to companies that are paying for things like abortions and worse.
I know, man. The stuff that they're teaching our kids in school, that anti-Catholic bigotry, it's getting crazy what they're pushing on them. I really just would like to spend money without having to worry about supporting these type of people.
You know, that's where Catholic-owned comes in. Finally, we have a way to shop with businesses that share all of our values.
Wait, hold on. What exactly is Catholic-owned?
Oh, it's the app to find tons of authentically Catholic-owned businesses from across the country and finally feel good about where your money goes. They've got national and local companies, goods and services, and they're adding more every day.
Man, I gotta check this out. Where can I find them?
You can download the free Catholic-owned app today and join us in building the new Catholic economy. Just use referral code CATHOLICMAN at signup. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Definitely not tepid on the intro. If you are looking for a jolt to your spiritual life, if you feel like my spiritual life is tepid, I need to energize it, then you need to come to Rome with us.
Hmm. I wasn't sure where you were going to go with that.
In a year from now. A pilgrimage is definitely one of those things. The pilgrimages I've done in my life have all had this effect where, it brings flesh to these things, especially when you go to Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure everybody says the Holy Land. We haven't been there yet, but...
yeah, I can't wait.
But when you go to those places... where it's like, hey, you know, like, hey, this is where Peter died. This is like when you go to see all of these things, it just,
it brings it to life.
It brings zeal. And it's just the beauty of Rome. Rome is just like engrossed in the beautiful. Mm-hmm. Everywhere. It's just amazing. So if you feel like, hey, you've got some tepidity in your life, sometimes sometimes you need a retreat.
Actually, that's one of the first things he says in this book.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I should totally write a book, dude. I did write a book.
You did. Congratulations. Also.
But you helped.
I did help. Well, we had to sell some copies. you can order some for Christmas. Beyond Living Beyond Sunday, making your home a holy place. But yeah, you can go to selectinternationaltours.com/Catholic Man Show and join us in Rome next year. It's going to be awesome because Blessed Carlo is going to be a saint.
Yes.
Giorgio Frassati is going to be a saint.
And we'll be seeing Carlo Acutis. Yeah, in Assisi. So it used to be Francis and Claire there in Assisi. Well, now Carlo Acutis is going to be there. Assisi is incredible.
Carlos Acutis.
Yeah. My daughter Mary, that's her, your goddaughter.
Right.
Her confirmation saint.
Yeah.
Carlo Acutis. But let me ask you this. I wanted to get to this. I just want your thoughts on this, because it seems a little bit odd to me where Jesus, when he talks about being lukewarm, he says, be either hot or cold.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're lukewarm, I'll spit you out. So it's almost like it's better for you to have a hatred or like, you know, to be like totally anti-Christian. It seems like he's saying it's better to be anti-Christian than to be this lukewarm Christian.
Well, I think like apathy or like sloth, you know, is just such a it's just such an evil, and it's an evil of our day, especially our modern day. But that doesn't answer your question, really.
Yeah. Well, just why do you think? Do you think that's an accurate interpretation?
Probably not.
That it's better to be anti-Christian than
probably not.
I don't know. I mean, it does seem like that's what he's saying. The only thing I can think of is like, well, if you're like very fervently anti-Christian, at least you are like, you're engaged. And if that's the case, like Christ can work with that.
At least you care about something.
Yeah, like you're, exactly. You're pursuing the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're like, no, I am anti-Christian, you know, that's...
because of these things.
Yeah, exactly. There's an honesty about that. Perhaps, whereas if you just are engrossed in apathy, you don't care. You're a dead man already.
Yeah, maybe so.
The man who's like against something, at least he is alive, so to speak.
He's fighting for something.
He's intellectually alive.
Yeah.
Whereas the apathetic man is like in a coma.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know that actually is the correct interpretation, but that's the only thing I can think of.
Very well. I do want to get your thoughts on this. He says, to avoid those who aim at perfection. This is like what you would do if you were tepid. So to avoid those who aim at perfection and eagerly seek company of those who lead a life of greater laxity. So namely, like, you know, not surrounding yourself with holy people, basically,
yeah.
and like almost avoiding them.
Well, for someone who is tepid, the thing is, just like virtue, vices are also habits. So tepidity is not something that you do one time. It's something that if you have the vice of tepidity or lukewarmness, it's something that you do reflexively. It's something that you do habitually. Okay. So if you have the habit of being lukewarm or tepid, then that is going to bring about some sort of both physical and spiritual sloth, right? And so to be around people who are morally vigorous, spiritually active, okay, is going to appear to these people to be a great amount of work, or to be like just exhausting all the time. You know, these are the kinds of people who might assent to the goodness of the of the lives of these people who are very spiritually active, but they themselves would never want to try, like, I wouldn't even want to be that holy. I wouldn't even want to try to pray that much every day. It, I would,
it,
you know
it,
what
it
I
reminds
mean?
Me of that book by Robert Riley on like the like being able to, I forget what he calls it, but it's the book's called Making Gay Okay by Robert Riley. And
like the rationalization.
Yeah, like the
rational, the very first chapter.
Yeah, sins of rationalization or something like that, where like I have a sin.
Yeah, the psychology of rationalization.
Is that what it's called? Yeah.
That's what he talks about. I don't, yeah. But that's more about where you have the, you're incapable of making a choice you don't view to be the best. So when you rationalize decisions, you add things to the equation to make them, to make the math add up the way you want it
to.
And
so it's like, hey, I'll accept your sin if you accept my sin, so that way we can all keep moving them forward. And so like, to me, there, like, I know that there have been times where I've been around other people where it's like, where I feel like that because I know that they're holy, like they're living a virtuous life, where I feel like that they are almost judging me at all times. It's like, actually, they're not judging me at all. It's just my own conscious being like, hey, you're not living up in whole, like living a virtuous life, that you're looking at them thinking they're judging you, but they're actually not judging you.
Isn't it funny how that makes you actually start judging them?
Right.
And all of a sudden you find yourself wanting to avoid these people.
Right.
Okay. And so you can see how, you can see how that happens, where it's like, oh, you know, these people are judging me. They're not.
They're not at all.
But all of a sudden you have this temptation to avoid them.
Right. Which is leads to our last one, who form their own conscience on their own by false principles, you know, and like, this is something that you can't.
Gosh, we see that all the time today. Especially when it comes to the pro-life issues.
Mm-hmm.
They're people, because everybody knows, I mean, there's nobody argues whether or not the pro-life issue is one of moral conscience or one of like, this is a serious thing that we need to get right. Nobody even tries to make that argument, right? Everybody knows, no, this is actually a big deal. But the people who argue against life, they in order to do it, they have had to form their consciences, because this is a haunting reality to live with.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I think that in many cases is why, because they are haunted by a reality that they live with, whether it's choices they've made in their own life or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But they have had to just absolutely do damage to their conscience in order to believe that it's okay to kill a baby in the womb. You know, but we say it's not just that, it's. I mean, think about all of the issues that have kind of revolve around life, whether it's on identity, sexual identity, transgender. I mean, like all of these things, like the things that people believe today, every other generation throughout all of history in every culture would have thought to be completely absurd.
Mm-hmm.
Like they would have laughed at you for thinking that.
Right.
But here we are, you know, it's like,
right.
Yeah.
So these are the like 11 characteristics of like what could be happening if you're living a tepid life, right? And so here's the dangers that he talks about that invariably accompany living a tepid life, okay? And this is piggybacking off of the number one of what we talked about, like the characteristics wise, is falling into mortal sin. A tepid life in a state of continual imperfection, commit venial sins without remorse, but seldom consider the malice of sin and the motives which should prompt them to retain from the
to refrain
thank you from the commission thereof. So I mean, again, the venial sins add up to, this is something that we can all I think relate to, that if you actually take a step back and you examine your conscience, you're like, why did I do that? And then you look back and it's like, well, I was actually kind of hungry and tired. And then like, I kind of got upset. And then I kind of like took it out on somebody else. And then I was upset about that. And then I fell into a little bit of a depression because I did that. I can't believe I did that. Which led me to do this other sin that I would never do unless I did those 18 other things that led up to this one thing.
I was in confession this week talking with the priest about the chain reaction of bad, like, you make, I made this bad choice, which is like, I could look back on and say, look, I don't even remember. It's the East, as far as from the East is from the West now.
Yeah.
But
one of the best things to do during Thanksgiving as you gather around the table is, like, a good icebreaker is asking your family, okay, what is the one thing that you're most embarrassed about?
Yeah, what was the last thing you said in confession?
Yeah, and then ask them to go ahead and let's go around the table and say, this is what I'm most embarrassed
about.
It's a great icebreaker.
Get out a notepad and a pen and be like, okay, what was the worst sin you've ever committed? Yeah.
We're out of time on Catholic Radio. Go check us out on The Catholic Man Show, catholicmanshow.com. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Yeah, but the chain of reaction of sin.
Yes, it is a chain reaction. And this one here about this, basically the dangers of falling into mortal sin. The danger of tepidity is that you will fall into mortal sin. It reminds me, like, this is why we say the phrase, you either pray every day or you go to hell. Which I think is a shocking phrase. It is a shocking phrase to people. And right. and it's I think, intentionally so. But I think it's true. You either pray every day or you'll go to hell. It's not because we're not being Pelagians, right? We're not saying that, oh, you have to, like, oh, you didn't do the work. You know, you have to, like, earn it. But if you don't pray every day, you're putting yourself on the path to hell. You're putting yourself on this path of tepidity. It is a daily prayer life by which we stoke those flames of fervor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Even, like you mentioned earlier in the show, where you didn't, like, you're going to adoration, you don't feel fervent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But that's not the point. So by praying every day, we enkindle those things. We keep this, like, source of grace in our life active in our own wills, okay? God is constantly active, pouring out his grace upon us. But if we're not willing to accept it, okay, mm-hmm. then it just washes over us. It doesn't have the effect God wants it to have on us because we're not accepting it, right? And so that daily life of prayer is the thing that keeps us from falling into this road of tepidity, which is a slow, easy,
methodical,
just a very lovely road to hell.
Mm-hmm. And this is the second danger, is that the tepid soul is on the point of being cast away with disgust by Almighty God. And this is where he brings in, you know, the lukewarmness, neither hot nor cold. I will begin to vomit thee out of my mouth.
I think Patrick Coffin once proposed the idea of making a shirt that said, don't be God's vomit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he ever did.
Yeah, I don't either. But this is very true. He goes on to say that the greatest sinners are often awakened from their death slumber by merely looking upon the crucifix, right? So those who are trapped in the throes of sin can actually be woken up by doing a pious act, right? By reflecting upon the last judgment or their mortality or the eternity of hell. While on the contrary, a slothful religious person he's writing to priests and religious, but this goes for all vocations. Where a slothful person who is accustomed to mediate carelessness and without proper attention upon these eternal truths, as is little touched by them as those who daily assist the dying are by the sight of death. And so he talks about how those who are, you know, in the throes of sin can easily actually be awakened by pondering these things. But those who are like, oh, no, I'm fine. I'm doing great. I'm just fine. I got a relationship with our Lord and Savior, you know, but not really living out the Christian life. It's very hard to walk by and see the crucifix or ponder your death or your mortality and think that, oh, I need to change my life.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you do for those people? What do you think? Like,
I typically walk up to them and slap them.
Yeah.
And say, you're going to die.
I do think you have to have something something shocking.
I do think slapping them would actually maybe effective.
I think that there are definitely a number of people on the planet it would work for. I think there's a number of other people it would not work for.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like there's,
I'm not doing it in Oklahoma or Texas where they're carrying guns.
I was gonna say there's an even bigger percentage of people where you go to jail,
right?
After
yeah.
doing it,
yeah.
Regardless of
don't
its effect,
do yeah. I don't recommend it. I'm just throwing
yeah,
it out there.
Yeah, like we'll start
just spitballing. Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
start calling you like restraining order Minahan.
Well, this is what they're talking about. He actually gives remedies of all of this. So we'll talk about that here in a second. But the last one, the last danger of living a tepid life is one that I would not have thought of either. But it's the risk of not dying a pious death. That's the risk of mm-hmm. living a tepid life. You know, like
to me, that's not a risk. That's a consequence. You know, it's like, oh, if you're living a tepid life.
Well, these are basically like you're these not, are the danger. This is like the danger. Like, dangers are the
I know,
a consequence.
To me, yeah, I mean, but is, it's like, oh, it's not like, oh, there's a chance. You might not. It's like, yeah, if you live a tepid life, you absolutely won't have a pious death. Like, oh, you think that you're just going to, like, pull piety out of your pocket on your deathbed?
Pull piety out of your pocket?
Yeah, like that's not the way it works. Thank you. You know that I appreciate a good alliteration. Yeah. But like if you don't practice piety, you won't have it. Mm-hmm. It's a virtue. It's a habit. You can't just get it in the last couple minutes before you die.
Without an extraordinary grace.
Yeah, unless it's a miracle.
Or extraordinary grace.
Which yeah. we could just call, yeah, like it's that would be yeah. a miracle.
Yeah. Which God can do.
He certainly can do it.
Right.
But it's not the thing that we should be counting on.
Right. But so there used to be a very pious tradition that you would always pray to Saint Joseph that you would obtain a pious death, right? That you'd die a holy death. And what does that really mean? It really means, you know, being able to die with the sacraments, mm-hmm. right? You know, to be able to die with extreme unction, with right. being able to have a last confession, to actually have communion right before you have the apostolic pardon.
Yeah, they used to call this concept of a holy death, they used to call it final perseverance, which I like that term more because I think it expresses more of what we're thinking about. What, like that at in your last moments, you wouldn't fail, right? Mm-hmm. That you've lived this life of faith, right. That you wouldn't recant the faith, you know.
Which I hear that, like, that, you know, the devil, like, really attacks the people right on their deathbed to try to get them to, like...
I believe that is, in fact, the case, that in your last moments, the devil knows you're about to die and will throw everything he's got at you, right?
Right.
In hopes that... And why does he do that? Because, sadly...
Because he hates you.
And because it works, probably. A small percentage of the time, or whatever percentage of the time, right?
Right.
I mean, if you're someone who's lived a holy life, you know, imperfect but penitent, and you know, maintained the you know, try to live a sacramental life, then I believe quite firmly that the Lord will protect you in those last hours. But we pray for final perseverance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's to me, I just like that term better because it reminds me of what I need to do in those last moments. I'm not praying for like, oh, give me a holy death. Actually, it's something I'm praying for that's something I need to be a part of, right? That I need to have, I need to persevere in those last moments. And that like, I would have
through
the
God's grace,
that you're, I would have
not,
the grace to do that.
Yeah, you're not preaching, yeah. It's not you.
Right, but the idea of a holy death is like, oh, just you know, like, kind of, I have been removed from it is what the way it sounds, you know, like I'm just gonna, it's just gonna be given to me, and like I don't need to participate.
Okay,
you see what I mean?
That's not how I would have interpreted it, but okay.
Yeah, so I just like I like the term final perseverance because it reminds me like, hey, I know you're dying, but this is not over. This race. You got to get, you know, like
you have to get through the finish.
Don't give up before you get to the finish line. You have to get through it.
Even if you're cramping, keep
that,
going.
Exactly. It's just like that. And like at the end of your life, it might be very similar. Like, this is the hardest moment. Maybe. Right. Who knows? But you need this final perseverance.
Right. So he also talks about how it's very hard to cure, living a tepid life. Like, it's very hard to be able to, if you're in that rut, to get out of that rut, so to speak. But he gives four quick, and they're very easy and very good. They're much easier said than done. And he says, so like, if you're living a tepid life, here's four things that you should do. First is have fervent meditation to be performed every morning. So pray every morning. To be pious and attentive to spiritual readings every day. To daily examine your conscience, joined with a particular examination. Like, so I'm not sure which particular examination he's referring to, but you probably pick one and have a daily examination. And then,
I don't think he means one specifically. I just means like you have one.
Right. Exactly. And the fourth one is this is an interesting one. A short recollection for at least half an hour every month. Which I found a little interesting, but basically just to like take 30 minutes out of the month, like the first Wednesday of every month or whatever, whatever day you want to pick, and recollect. Like, this is a very say Alphonsus Liguori style, right? Like the 12 steps of holiness, where he talks about just grow in one virtue every once a month, like one virtue every month, and then by the 12 months in 1 year, you've grown in 12 virtues, and you just kind of keep going. So like, he just talks about like,
don't you think if you could grow materially in 12 virtues, don't you think that you would be a radically holier person? I mean, just like,
of course you would.
I mean, even if you just one, if you could just like really commit to a virtue for 1 month, it's like, wow, I picked this virtue. I think it would be like sensibly, yeah, holier.
No, I totally think that would be the case.
Yeah.
And so this is why
I'm just too lukewarm to do it. That's the thing.
It's not good.
Yeah. I'm kidding, but
don't do it.
It's like that way. Making a joke about it. I guess because it's true.
Pray for me. I do think it's important to like I think this is really good, and this is something I would like to incorporate even as you're going into the Advent season, or you're going into the new year, of like deciding on a day, putting it on your calendar that on Monday, the first Monday of the month, or whatever day you decide, that I'm going to reflect upon the last, 30 days, and just spend 30 minutes, which is a long time. Like, if you just sit there and think for 30 minutes about the last 30 days, on your progress, I think that would be very beneficial.
Mm-hmm. One thing I'm excited about is the upcoming Exodus disciplines for Advent.
Oh yes.
This
the
is
Angelus. Is
well, that well, I like that one. That's not what I was going to say though.
Oh, okay.
I thought, man, this is such an Advent thing to do. Begin your day with 10 minutes of silence and end your day with 10 minutes of silence. I begin my day with prayer every day. And so 10 minutes of silence, yeah, I mean, that's not a problem. But I don't typically end my day with just 10 minutes of silence.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I really thought, I mean, I don't know that I would have thought to do that,
mm-hmm.
but that is such an Advent-y, like, all right, before the end of the day, all right, now let's
end in silence.
Let's wait. You're just sitting there and just waiting, you know?
One of the guys that I work with had the idea a few weeks back of every, at 11 o'clock every day, every work day, we stop what we're doing and we jump on a Zoom call and we pray the rosary. And we start the rosary off with 3 minutes of silence, and we end the rosary with 3 minutes of silence. And this is something that we do, as a team every week. We pray the rosary together, and we actually list the like 50 guys' names that we pray for during that rosary. So 10 names for each decade, and we go through and list their names out. So if you've ever done Exodus, you've ever signed up, whether you're doing it now or you're not, you know, we cycle through all the men once a week praying for you in the rosary. But we decided to do that every day and with for these men. And it really is interesting how much the prayer, like the prayer comes to life, giving those even 3 minutes of bookends of silence before and silence after.
Mm-hmm.
Giving the Lord just a few minutes just to speak to you. It's very impactful.
It is, yeah. The thing about tepidity is that we all have it, okay? I have it, you have it, all of us have it.
Jim has it.
Jim definitely has it.
Yeah.
You can just take one look at Jim.
Jim, you definitely have it.
You're like, that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I bet he's got a gooey center, just so lukewarm.
Dude, he's way holier than us, by the way.
Well, that's why we can make fun of him.
He's over here like, I got to get new friends. These guys are like,
He's over there thinking like inside, like, oh, by God's grace, his words are so true. I have so much to repent of. And so much to amend in my life, you know, like a holy person would say when you accused him of having a lukewarm, gooey sinner. But lukewarmness is one of those things that is very difficult. If you have a friend who's lukewarm and you confront them about it, you're going to get a defensive reaction, okay? If you have a friend who is dishonest and you confront them about it, then they have no choice but to like, you know, you're right. Like there are a lot of things, a lot of vices your friends can have that, don't have the problem that lukewarmness does, right? Because the lukewarmness is the problem. When you confront them about it, they're lukewarm. I don't care.
There's a lot of vices that you can have.
Yes, the same thing. And so I pointed out about your friends to turn it around on you, okay? That the only person who can change and get rid of it is yourself. If you don't decide today that I will get rid of this, and like I will need help, it will take time, and it will be arduous.
It'll be hard. But it's
that's
more,
the thing. It's like it's going
to
be hard.
I just want to surrender more to you, Lord. Just make my heart bigger and to love you more.
Yeah, absolutely. But the thing that he's going to ask of you is like, it's going to be, whether it's a disordered appetite, a disordered affection, right? Like whatever it is, you're going to really like whatever he asks you to give up or whatever mm-hmm. he asks you to do. It's either going to be, he's going to ask you to give up something that you really like, or he might ask you to do something you might not want to do. Okay. But the biggest and the hardest part is just saying yes. Every single time in my life where I've been confronted with these things, where the Lord felt like he's asking me something I don't want to do, or I'm having to give something up, as soon as I just accept
cross,
it becomes half. And then all of a sudden, the burden is like
half as light.
It's like what Jesus says, my burden is easy. Like my yoke is easy, my burden is light. Like once you actually give it up, it's not anything like I imagined it would be to have given this thing up or to have done this, you know, like it's actually not hard at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just have to be willing to do it.
Mm-hmm. Accept it.
Yeah.
And that's all I got to say about that.
All right.